From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Conducted, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Beth Korth, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor,
and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix. I, too, make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are creative direction and time management. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. So we didn't have a lot of time to talk about this last week.
We did not.
Because we had a big guest in the clubhouse.
Yes.
But Beth, you're guest hosting again this week.
Hello.
As you did last week. So hello.
Hi. It's me.
It is.
Listeners know Beth because she's been on the show a bunch of times for a bunch of different reasons, which makes you a perfect guest host because you know the clubhouse. And, you know, Ellen's out this week, so you filled in with a topic which you've totally prepared for.
Yes.
Well, we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not just a pal of ours and the chair of the Twin Cities chapter of the International Game Developers Association. But you also have a little narrative business that we want to give you time to talk about because it's something our listeners actually might be interested in. And we don't do a lot of like direct advertising.
Yeah.
But like people should hear.
Yes, yes.
Direct advertising. That makes it sound so icky.
It does, doesn't it?
Yep. So I have my consulting business. It's called Narrative Nuance, narrativenuance.com, which I hope you put in the show notes. Maybe.
We will. I'm writing it down right now.
All right. So what
listeners
I do
are furiously scratching it down anyway. So just in case.
My little tagline is that I tell your story your way. That goes a couple of different ways. So one thing I do is for nonprofits, I do testimonials and stuff like that. So I go and I interview their clients and their volunteers and stuff so that we can put some stuff in their newsletters. But I also have done some game narrative design. I don't know if you've heard of a little game called Verdant Skies, but we released that in 2018. So if you have some character dialogues or anything like that that you want someone to help with or go over, that would be something I could do. I also like to say that I help craft indie stories because I think that it's really important when you're selling your studio that you're not just selling your game, you're selling you, right?
People
invest in people they like, so
right.
I want to help people uncover their inner indie story, hero's journey to
and that's like
dev.
The consultancy part of this, which is like, you're a writer, and like that's great. Hire Beth as your writer. But at the same time, like, you have a story that you want to tell, and maybe you're not a writer. But it's still a story you want to tell. And sometimes you need help with that. And that story could be about, what your studio is, not just what your game's about. I think that's really great. I don't think there's a lot of that type of service out there. But it's, I think, especially for indie studios who really, we put on a lot of hats, but like, we can't do everything.
We absolutely can't.
Right?
It's very valuable to have somebody else who can focus on that kind of on other things.
Yeah.
So this is a very valuable.
And I imagine
resource.
Those services scale with your needs.
Yes, yes. That's one of the things that I am super not comfortable talking about because I don't have established rates yet because I'm still not sure what it's worth. But yes, it depends on, I think, the number of hours that I expect a project to be and stuff like that. Because I'm obviously willing to take less if it's more consistent long-time work than like a short-term contract.
Right,
right.
But at the same time, I imagine you could also do like an hour session or something.
Oh, yeah.
For someone who just needs a check on what, you know, what's this? What, does this make sense?
I can do a half an hour monthly check-in for a small but not nominal fee.
Yeah. So take advantage now while Beth's prices are still low. And yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, this is an ad at the top of the show.
Woo-hoo!
But you know what?
So what?
Like, if you want that for you, be our friend.
Yeah.
And then come in and make a fool of yourself
and host the show. Yeah, do a service for us, and we'll do a service for you.
I'm hoping that the service that I offer is a service to the community, not just my pocketbook. Obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Well, we do have other topics to discuss.
Yes.
Starting with Steven's topic.
Yes, this is going to be kind of fun because I teased this last roundtable.
Ellen's going to be so mad that she missed this news.
She is. I think I told her before, but she doesn't know. Anyway. okay, so yeah, last roundtable, I teased that I had fancy news that was more fancy than what I had teased before. I'm not doing a good job of doing it.
On the edge of my seat.
I know. I can't wait. What is going on? I even have these notes in front of me, and I'm like, what do they mean?
Okay. Cool. I'm glad everybody's excited. We will be working on Sledgehammer Bride.
What?
Yes. Okay. Eventually. I can't say when because I don't know when.
Right.
But
Sledgehammer Bride as a game concept that Steven had. You've had it for a long time. We've talked about it on the show a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. We did an entire episode to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You've talked in the past about pitching it at Future Club, where you work.
Yeah, I pitched it at Future Club. And I think I talked about it at GDC. We pitched it to a group, and they were really excited about this idea.
Yeah.
And it worked within their interests, too. I'm trying to be a little vague about it because I don't remember everything I should be saying.
Yeah, you can't announce all of it, but you found someone to go with you on this journey with the company.
Yes.
That is also excited about this concept.
Yes.
And that means more than just that this thing is sort of in the first stage of getting made. It also means something else, right?
Well, yeah. So we're getting to the point where, like, actually starting to talk about, like, what Sledgehammer Bride will be.
Mm-hmm.
In context of the studio itself. And so we're starting to do some, like, certain plannings and things like that. And effectively, what that means is I'm creative lead, a creative director on Sledgehammer Bride on this game.
Yeah.
Which is scary because I've never done it before. But I'm excited because, like, I as Mark said, I've been thinking about this game for a very long time. So I'm really excited to, like, to get to a point where, like, we can actually make it and it'll be something that people can play, mm-hmm. listeners can play. That's great. So my topic is creative direction because it's something I haven't done before, and I kind of wanted to talk to y'all about it because I'm curious if you have experience with it, and I guess your thoughts around this concept, because mm-hmm. it's new to me. I guess I can start with, like, my current experience now, how I've been dealing with it, because we haven't had, like, a lot of meetings around Sledgehammer Bride right now, but effectively what's happened is we had a planning meeting. Franny, our CEO, she's been on the show before, has been really enthusiastic about Sledgehammer Bride 2, and that helps me feel really good about it. I mean, a lot of people are really excited about it at work, which is great.
Yeah.
But, like,
I mean, it's sort of unfair because the concept, like, is so elevator pitch ready.
Yeah, it is.
It's amazing. I've never heard anything that you can love so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love bringing this on the show because everybody's so excited about it. But Franny's really excited about it, too. She set up a meeting where we just, like, talked about, like, what we would need for a prototype for Sledgehammer Bride.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me recognize that, like, there was a bunch of things about Sledgehammer Bride that I have not, like, really thought through.
Yeah.
Especially, like, with respect to, like, what I would want for a prototype. Effectively, all we need to do is just test this idea out, right? Like, you got light attacks, you got heavy attacks, power through, enemy attacks, things like that. We just need enough stuff so you can test that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, like, I don't know exactly, like, how many attacks you need in order to test that thoroughly enough to feel comfortable with the idea. I don't know what kinds of animations you need. I don't know how many animations you need. I don't have a fully solid idea on the art style. I kind of have a general idea, but not really. There's, like, certain things about the location and the types of enemies we're fighting I haven't thought about. Things like that I've still been trying to think through.
Yeah.
And so, like, while we were in this meeting, I was like, I don't know. I would basically kind of just give, like, a gut reaction to certain questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, does that make sense? Is that too much? Sometimes it'd be like, yeah, that seems fine. Other times it'd be like, no, that's way too many. or something like that. So, like, that's kind of how I've been dealing with it. People will ask me, like, what are you imagining for such and such? And then I'll be like, I don't have a strong opinion on this. Or what I was thinking was blah, blah, blah. You know? So I've been kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, people have been giving, like, a bunch of, like, suggestions and things that are kind of unrelated to necessarily what we're talking about in the moment. But, like,
right. Cool
ideas that people have had. I mean, like, Mark, you brought up the idea of, like, having, like, a bridesmaid with a drill or something, right?
A pickaxe bridesmaid.
Yeah, right. Or something.
I'm sure you've gotten this hint, but I have so many ideas for this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have to be like, nope. I have to stay away.
Sometimes it spills out, but I really appreciate it.
I need to be a cheerleader.
Yeah. but some like I think other people on the team also have like a bunch of ideas, and so they will sometimes bring that stuff up.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that now because like there's a lot of things that aren't solidified, and it's helpful to just have like ideas to bounce off of.
Well, you're enmeshed in the process of that now,
right?
So you can these the suggestions you get from your team,
yeah,
are actionable.
Yes.
Right. You can work with them.
Mm-hmm.
They can inform your decision making.
Right. And eventually there will be ideas that I'll be like, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And I have to reject some of them.
And you got
to
get your own sledgehammer.
No. No. That's terrible. But I'm kind of used to rejecting ideas at Future Club already because I'm the only programmer. So like if
you
they
get
ever
to tell people this is out of scope,
we can't do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. That's kind of been my experience with this. Like now is like I haven't done a lot because we haven't needed to, and we haven't like actively started it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious y'all's experience with creative direction, or if my experience mirrors what your experience is so far. With my like one meeting,
doing like the creative stuff with that. So, mm-hmm. like we started with a game design document, and so I had a lot of input on that.
Yeah, I don't even have that yet.
Yeah, that was like my first question, Steven. Do you have a game design document? Do you have your pillars established?
I don't know. I think that's part of the thing is I recognize now that like I've had this concept in my head for a long time, but I haven't like sat down and like. Solidified it.
Yeah.
And I mean, pillars.
It's amazing how much you think you have it figured out.
Yep.
Right?
I
felt the same way about longstanding things that mm-hmm. have just been floating in my mind.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah, because I mean, you've been thinking about it forever. Obviously, you've thought about every nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that was one of the things that really helped, like, making the game design document and the pillars was like, okay, so it was easy because it was just Andy and I had to decide. Like,
sure.
It wasn't a full team that I had to get buy-in from, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if we disagreed on something, it was a much shorter conversation. If you are creative lead and you get to just make your game design doc, that would be awesome. I don't know if that's how that works in a studio like you work at. I don't know how that
probably,
works.
Probably, no, actually, it would probably be, well, I don't know. It actually also depends on, like, what role I will do outside of just the creative direction. Because I'm the only programmer, right? So like, in this situation with Sledgehammer Bride, we might have access to more programmers, so I might not do most of the programming work. But I don't know if I'm going to do like this game design work as a result of that or what. So I might be heavily involved in writing the game design document, but I'm not positive on that. It's a good question.
That's something we've never had. I mean, I imagine it is different from team to team, right?
Yeah.
And when it's indie, there's usually like a lead, like an initiator, a project initiator. Who's either mm-hmm. someone who hired, you know, or a solo dev or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a lot of times how we think of game design documents is like the person with the vision does it or whatever.
Yeah.
But like we actually haven't really even talked to anybody on the show who could speak to how that process is done in sort of standard frameworks of, you know, like AAA teams or whatever.
Yeah.
I just Googled.
Yeah.
What does a video game creative director do? Because it says that you, as the creative director, are responsible for conceptualizing and defining the overall creative vision and direction of the game.
Yeah.
This includes establishing the themes, tone, art style, storytelling approach, and gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to make the game design doc, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's tacked on at the end of that list, but it's not actually a design position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really. Now, I suspect it will be for you,
mm-hmm.
And it probably is for a lot of people, but it's not explicitly one.
Right. No, I think typically, well, it depends on the size of your team, and I think that's a good point, Beth, that, like, our team, we have less than 20 people, so, like, it's not huge, but it's not small. But I think depending on the size of your team, a lot of times when you are a creative director, you don't really even necessarily touch a lot of the actual development of the game. You just make sure everything is going in the right direction. So you keep in contact with everybody. And if they have questions, you get back to them with answers with respect to like how they should do certain things.
Yeah.
So like that will be one of the tasks I will take on when I'm doing this. I've worked with creative directors on different projects in Future Club too. And that's effectively what I would do is I'd be like, hey, I have this idea on how I should code this thing. Does this make sense for what you're envisioning this should work? And they'll be like, yes or no or whatever.
Right. So a future club already has kind of a standard definition of what this means to them.
Yes.
Okay, that's very helpful.
Yeah. So I can ask.
But you're not like 100% on board with what that is just yet, because you're so new to it still.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% on board with it, what it means to me, because I've seen different examples of it.
You've got opportunity to shape it.
Well, for myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, too. It's like everybody is a lead differently. When you lead other people, you lead differently than somebody else would. Yep. So I'm trying to lean into how my leadership style works. And wait, I've done this before. I have done this before. Hold on a second.
Stop the presses.
When I worked on Rhythm Rumble, I was effectively creative lead.
Yeah.
That's
just been excised from your memory.
Actually, yes.
Because that game never came out. Yeah.
Yeah, it never came out. But that's basically what I was doing, is like our artist would be like, Stephen, how should we do this thing? And I'd be like, let me think about it.
99% of the job.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
And then I would come up with some examples of how this would work. And then like I'd send them to her, and then she would do some art, do some animation. She'd send them back to me. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, this works, this doesn't work. And yeah, it'd be a back and forth sort of thing.
Yeah.
This was on a team of two. It mm-hmm. became a team of three because we got an animator to help us with it. But like, even then it was still like, at that point, actually, it wasn't much creative direction, and I was still programmer. So like, I was still programming the game.
Yeah.
So I've never been exactly in this specific position, but I forgot that I had done this before. Okay. At least I can draw off of that experience now that I remembered it and I unlocked that memory.
Yeah.
So that's neat.
Level up.
Yeah. Mark, do you have any experience with creative direction?
Not explicitly in games.
Okay.
But I've been a director.
Sure.
On film projects and commercial video projects and on design projects and in advertising. I've had leadership roles.
Okay.
And I guess I would call myself the creative director of Widget Satchel.
Yeah, that's true.
But like, I mean, at a certain point, there was a little duocracy to that.
Yeah.
I sort of assumed control to the power of will on that one, because we, it started as a group jam, and then it I'm the one who cared the most about it, and it just slowly became more and more mine. Even though everybody was still contributing.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't call that, that was a little bit fly by night, I suppose. And on Dream Settler, Jay, who is Jay Tholen, who did was the creative lead on Hypnospace.
Mm-hmm.
He is ostensibly the creative lead on Dream Settler, but it's been very democratized with the three of us that are working on it.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of his style, because he's not really he doesn't have a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's, I would say it's very unorganized, but what that means is that gives space for both Mike and I, and Mike had this experience on Hypnospace as well, but the three of us are kind of like speaking as one.
Yeah.
So I definitely find myself like making decisions that I feel like are in the interest of the things we decided as a group, but I'll still feel like they're my decisions.
Hmm.
And then sometimes I'll step back and I'm like, actually, this doesn't seem like how I would do it. Maybe I should change. And I'm like, oh, right. I didn't actually decide this.
Right.
So that's a weird one, I think.
Sure. Okay.
But on other projects where I've been a creative lead, I think it will surprise no one listening that I can be a micromanager. But it's something I'm very aware of, because the dangerous thing with me is you can't ask me for an opinion on something, because I will form one.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, because I don't know that I imagine the uncharitable way to look at it is that I'm just like hyperactive and can't let things go or whatever.
Mm.
But a lot of times when I will come up with a thing very quickly, because I've had so many of the pieces in my head.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, how should that work? I know. And like, that is definitely how I've been in a lot of ways. It doesn't make me faster in execution or anything.
Sure.
And so what I've done, particularly when working with people who have expertise that I don't have, and that's the thing that is tricky when you want to learn how to do a lot of things, is that you can then know how to do those things.
Right, right.
And so then your opinions have weight.
Yeah.
And so I am sometimes very comfortable just saying, like, I do know what I'm talking about when I'm, making a decision collaboratively. Like, I actually have these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But in areas where I don't, and this is when I've worked with cinematographers and with actors, what I really like about this is I'll create a vacuum for them to fill.
Okay.
Like I will decide not to decide something.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a little bit of a hack, and it's not really my leadership style. But what it does is, because the thing is, what I need from people when I'm in a leadership role,
mm-hmm.
is I need them to understand that even though like I will have an opinion on absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Like, that does not mean that I will not endorse their opinion over mine.
Sure.
I'm very comfortable doing that.
Right.
But I think it does scare people from, because I will just form an opinion. I'm like, this is the way it makes sense to me. And then people will think that, like, I feel very strongly about that. And I don't always.
Okay.
And so what I often do is I'll leave these points of vacuum where I want people to fill in. And then what happens, there's the is what it is that we've talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. And what I like about that is the is what it is so powerful, because it's like, then it's like, now that's what it is. And now my opinions will be based on that.
Yeah, okay.
And I love that, because it's collaborative in a way that can be effortless.
Yeah.
But it has to be, like, planned for. But the more important thing is that it then provides people who I work with agency to then start being more proactive about the ideas they bring to the table.
Right.
And start asking me, hey, I know you said this, but what about this?
Yeah.
Because then in my mind, I'm like, okay, great. What about that?
Mm.
And I love that. But I think it's a hard environment to establish, I think, when you're working with me in particular. Because I do tend to have an opinion on everything, because I'm very autodidactic, and I am I'm equally interested in every field.
Sure.
And I'm also very respectful of the expertise it takes to reach it. So I feel confident when I do have an opinion on something. And I have to be very careful to, like, make sure that, like, because that this is the slowest way to work on a team.
Mm.
It's the absolute slow. It's so ineffective.
Yeah.
Every time I've really gone for that, like, earlier in my career, like, it's never ever worked.
Mm.
Like, never once has it really worked. And so you have to find ways to work around it, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's sort of interesting in the position that you're in, because you have a lot of opportunities for vacuums to invite others to fill.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. You spend all this time thinking about it, but you will discover, as people start to fill those vacuums, the things that are like, oh no, this is not right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you don't know it yet is actually a really powerful kickstart to the collaborative process.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting.
It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
But it's also exciting.
Right.
I think I'm recognizing that. I think part of what I was experiencing a little bit when we had this meeting, I was feeling a little bit of, like, imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I the person who came up with this idea, the one leading this game? Somebody else who's more qualified should do that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a little bit of what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
But, like, that's interesting, especially, like, talking about, like, leaving vacuums open for people, because, like, I'm pretty good at that, particularly because I don't have as many interests in working on a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
So, like, if somebody is like, I feel like this should be how the narrative works or something, I think I'd probably be more comfortable having somebody handle that.
I think you do, to interrupt you, I think you do ultimately still need to keep an interest.
Right. Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
and that's
absolutely
what makes it, that's the difference between a collaborator and a leader.
Yes.
Right? Is if someone else is bringing some things to the table, you not only have to endorse that or allow it as a creative director, you need to, like, harness it.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you're not, you do have to have opinions.
Yeah.
Ultimately. Right?
Yes. Well, yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's like, I do have opinions on these kinds of things when it comes to Sledgehammer, right? Because I have been thinking about it so long. Even though I don't necessarily know the minutia on how exactly the art should appear, I will have an idea on how I've been envisioning it. And if this doesn't quite match up, I could be like, why doesn't this match up? Is it okay that it doesn't match up? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I recognize that, like, when Franny is asking me questions about, like, how this prototype should work, I recognize that, like, even though I hadn't necessarily thought about, like, specific aspects of things that she was asking about, I did have opinions on it. Even, like, opinions that I had talked about, like, I had said in my pitch for Sledgehammer Bride before to Future Club, I said that, like, the levels were going to be, like, 15, 30 minutes long. And then, you know, this was months later when we're having this meeting now, I came back to that and I was like, no, that doesn't make any sense. It should be a lot shorter than that.
Mm-hmm.
It should be, like, 3 to 5 minutes or something. So, like, I think that, like, my thoughts, like, formulated over time.
Yeah.
And so I have, like, a vision on what I think Sledgehammer Bride should be. So that's helping me recognize better what, when I don't necessarily have all the answers to things, I can, like, I can form an opinion on certain things just due to, like, all of that thought that I've already put into it.
Yeah.
So that, like, helps me feel a little bit more comfortable with it. Also, I'm very comfortable, like, asking folks if I don't know a thing, it's particularly at Future Club. Like, if I'm like, I don't know how to do this, and I'm the programmer, and I'm, like, supposed to know how to do this, they'll be like, oh, well, you'd spend some time to figure it out. So, like,
yeah,
I'm comfortable asking questions about, like, things I don't know and things like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot too. Of, I mean, trust in a team is valuable.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably I imagine it's probably difficult for people who get, like, brought in to lead a team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And don't have that familiarity and have to build it from scratch.
Right, right.
You're not in that position, thankfully.
No, no.
And because of the way the Future Club works, like, it's a reconfiguration. So it's not like you're going to be in charge of somebody or somebody's who may have previously been in charge of you or adjacent to you in a different field. So, like, there's very little chance for them to treat you like a boss.
Yeah.
They'll treat you in the context in which you're working with them.
Right.
That's a privilege that not everybody gets at a company. They sort of have their position in the company, and that's their position on each project.
Yeah.
And so, which is fine as it goes, but it's probably going to be exciting to, because a lot of the, there's a lot of, like, I don't know if it's office politics or what, but there's, like, a natural human inclination to, like, characterize and contextualize your experiences with people because of that system, those systems.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of that is going to just kind of be a mist and waft away.
Yeah.
Because it's really going to be about the work because of the experience that your team has on other projects.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All of the stuff that we've been doing to get this horror game working out has definitely kickstarted we definitely feel like a bond.
Yeah.
It was a little in the trenches there for a bit. So that definitely will help with that. Yeah. I appreciate y'all talking with me about this, because, like, I definitely feel more comfortable with the idea that I am creative director for Sledgehammer Bride. Oh my gosh, it's going to be on the credits.
It's real. It's real.
It's real. Yes.
Until then, it's just work.
Yeah.
Well, first step then, before we close this topic out, the first step is going to be, maybe if not the design document, design pillars?
I feel more comfortable working on games when I have design pillars established. I have not done that yet, but I think that's probably next. That's probably next
step.
And
I suppose one of the things, because it's also a managerial position in a lot of ways, like, you're going to have to be designing the workflow for a lot of this stuff.
Oh, heck.
The process by which it's checked against the design pillar.
Yeah, that's true.
What happens when a discussion needs to happen? What's the threshold for those kinds of things? It's going to be some logistics.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Sorry to bring you down at the end there.
But you have the aesthetic in your mind, so you can make a mood board and then just give that to the art team and be like, it's got to fit within my mood board.
Oh, y'all are much more organized. Well, than me. I don't even know how to do a mood board.
Here's the thing, Stephen, is that because you are the one designing this process, it's your process.
Yep.
Right,
and,
okay.
And, you know, you can take advice, you can do some learnings.
Okay.
But when people, they're working in the process you are designing, because they need to make sure that you are your best self when you to be the best creative director.
Sure.
And that means it needs to be designed in a way that is best for you.
Okay.
And so if that means that you want a ton of design pillars because you want to be granular about certain things and others, or you want three big ones that are really broad, but can be, but everything could be checked against them.
Yeah.
Like, that's, those are totally different ways to make a game, but whatever it is there, or maybe it's instead of a design pillar, or for art, you may just have this as a mood board instead of a description.
Yeah.
Like, it's up to you. You get to decide how that works.
Okay.
And there's a burden, because you want that to be something that people can come on board and work within, but it should be tailored to you.
Yeah.
And I think you are probably more used to tailoring your work to other people's work.
Yes, I am.
And you're also, I would say, amenable to that.
That's true.
I would describe you as that. You're very good at adapting and fitting in and excelling, but I think the challenge is that you are going to be set. People are going to have to adapt to the way you want to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And that's going to, and that's going to be very valuable to you ultimately.
Yeah, that's true.
And like when you said, I'm never, on an early episode of this program, you said, I'm never going to learn another engine but Unity in my entire life.
I did say that.
And then the moment you were forced by circumstance and fate to learn something else, you loved it.
Yeah.
And you got good at it quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect similar things here.
Oh, well, thank you for the vote of confidence. I do appreciate that. Yeah, that's, I will have to establish what that means. I guess that's part of it, right? I want to be able to establish what that means for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that just means everybody takes more nap. I don't know.
It's pillar one.
Pillar one, more naps.
I mean, I'd work on that team.
hire Dale to join you as well.
Yeah. Just team nap.
Oh, I believe we could consult on those naps. The appropriate time of day, temperature of the room. All right, so we're going to invite the community to the Discord channel.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Where can they find the link to the Discord channel?
nicegames.club/discord.
Oh, there it is. All right.
Beth, are you part of our Discord? Oh, pressure, I guess.
Because I've been on the show.
Yeah! Well, there's a bunch of fun conversations that you can have on our Discord. We talk about new episodes that have come out recently. Also, random topics that sometimes people bring up because they're, like, working on it in their day-to-day or in their hobbies or what have you.
And if people have questions about Sledgehammer Bride,
yes,
that's a place to ask it.
Yes, you can ask me. Please don't ping me, but you probably will anyways because you're very excited and I understand it. You can go to nicegames.club/discord and join the community and have a good time.
And is that also where you announce new episodes?
It is.
And anything else fun?
No, nothing else fun.
No.
No.
Nope, that's it.
It's all business, pretty much. It's
that's why I silenced notifications. No, I'm kidding. Sorry, guys.
No, that's great.
I'm sorry.
Goofs aside, the Discord community is what you make of it.
It is.
Yeah. We provide the playing fields, but you are all the players.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the metaphor is properly right. Maybe as a stage player. But working it out in real time here. But yeah, if you want it to be a place where you talk about topics you heard about the show, that's up to you. If you want it to be a place where you talk about game dev topics that we should bring on the show,
yeah.
If you want to use it as a place to pressure Steven into making a certain choice,
oh, gosh.
Or whatever. Like... It's not up to us.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, we'll ban you if you're awful, but
yeah.
But you could. It's the community is formed by community, so that's what the Discord is. It's a place for you. So that's once again, Steven.
Nicegames.club/discord.
People are driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, so Steven is going to have to be, you know, managing his calendar a lot, I suspect.
Yes.
I mean, or maybe not. I don't know. It's up to you, man.
Scheduled nap.
But that's my transition towards Beth's topic, which is time management. Which, Beth, why'd you bring that topic to the clubhouse?
Because it's an elusive goal, a dream of mine to someday be good at time management.
Yeah.
And I remember Mark mentioning that he had some time management tricks, sort of.
Sort of. Sort of is the correct term.
I mean, everybody sort of got them.
Yeah.
I have yet to find a time management hack that works for me.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that somebody else had one.
Yes, I have I've talked to you, but I've also talked on the show recently about my more rigid week where I work on some projects some days and some on other days and how that's going. not a lot of updates since we talked about that last.
Okay.
But yeah, sort of is the right word. I think it's working.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to judge these things.
Right. You can't evaluate until you find out if it's not done yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you know, on projects with large timescales, like when I was doing commercial video graphic design, like 2 week turnarounds. Like you knew how early or late you were. You spent a lot of your time management was just a natural part of the thing. But like on a project you worked for more than a month on, and like on games where you worked more than a year on, like it's really difficult. Ooh. And you try to break it down into smaller pieces, but those are so fuzzy.
Yeah.
It's really tricky.
I'm glad you brought up that, because I think that, if you have like a big long term project and you don't like establish like breakpoint in between that, then like there's no way you can possibly manage it. You can say, I'll have the core gameplay done in 3 months, but like how are you gonna know that, right?
What does that even mean
exactly? So I think what we do at Future Club, we have sprint. I think a lot of indie devs use sprint. I think they're nice, even if we don't necessarily, we might not necessarily do it the correct established agile way. I think what I found nice about that is effectively I just remember I need to get all this stuff done within 2 weeks. What does that mean? I have so many hours in the day that I work, and I have to get this task done. Then I split up how much I try to estimate how long these times are going, or how long these tasks are going to take for me to do them, and then I plan my weeks around that time, and I set goals for myself every day. So I'm like, I have to get UI for this thing to function by the end of Wednesday or something like that. And that's kind of how I do it. So then I don't micromanage like the specifics of it, but then I can start to feel like if it's getting a Wednesday and I'm like, I got some of the buttons in, but I didn't actually put them anywhere, they don't function, they don't have the things that they need to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit behind and I really got to focus up or something. Or I'm like, oh, well, I don't actually have enough, I needed more time to do this than I thought I did, and maybe I need to get it done by Thursday, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that helps. But like that's how I've been doing stuff at Future Club, and it's been pretty nice.
Yeah, best do that.
So the core of my problem is, let me think of how to phrase this. I have all my life worked best under pressure at the last minute.
Yeah.
I know I'm lying when I put a due date on the calendar.
Okay.
How do I fix that?
Yeah. Okay, that's a good question. Because I also feel like I work better. Well, I tell myself this, that I work better when I work at the last minute.
I only do things when I'm panicking and it's, oh my God, it's due.
Right. And when you tell yourself that works, that means you can just watch a movie right now.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe it's not the best or the healthiest habit. But I do that with certain things.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of why I like having the 2 weeks thing, is because
because regardless, in 2 weeks that's going to be done.
Yeah, and admittedly, I work in a team where they are expecting this of me, and it's even more pressure because I'm the only programmer. So if I don't get it done, it doesn't get done, and that's
the kind of pressure that it's institutionalized. It's you cannot work around it.
Yeah,
and sometimes that is what you need.
Yeah,
I'm with you both. I feel like sometimes you do work best when you have to get it done.
Yeah.
When this deadline is there and there's no other choice.
Yeah,
then you'll get it done. And then sometimes you have to manufacture those scenarios for yourself.
Yes.
And it feels so silly. How am I not an adult enough to just do it anyway? And it's like, no, I'm not.
Oh, sometimes you really do just have to trick yourself into getting stuff done.
I mean, it's a lot of it's about habits. But all
time management.
Hmm?
Maybe the topic is more, how do I grow up in times I'm supposed to do?
But yeah, it is about habits, but it's also about the work that you're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? Because some things are more conducive to certain types of things and some things are not. So in my case, I have two big projects I'm working on. I devote 2 to 3 days for each of them per week. And that works out okay because that's enough to get going. But if those were different types of projects, then maybe that wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I also have, when I work on Noble Engine, that's a thing where tasks come to me from the community. Who make their games in Noble Engine, they will report bugs, and I tell them file it as a GitHub issue, and then when there's enough of those, then I devote a Saturday to it.
Yeah.
And that works really well for that project. If I were to, say, do a weekly on that, then it would be different work.
Sure. sure.
That would be, and you know, maybe people would be, appreciate that because it'd be more features and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it also means I'm probably working less on fixing things.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is. I think it's very work dependent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
And that's why some people are like, well, what's the problem with all you creative types? It's like, because it's like we have weird tasks.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they're unusual. Absolutely. They're not tested. They're brand new. No one's done exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is helpful to find things, models, people who've done things that are similar to what you're doing, or you know, accounts of the types of the best ways to do the kind of work you're doing. But like, it's not easy to find that stuff, right? Yeah, or to search into your past and find something similar to what you've done before.
The problem is that it's too easy to find that stuff.
Oh, okay.
The reason that I have trouble with time management is I go and I look online, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And none of them have ever had writer's block.
Yeah. One thing that benefits me and the type of person I am is that if I have seven things, I'm not going to be blocked on all of them.
Right.
It's very unlikely.
You can just do something else.
So I also do like projects where I'm doing multiple things within a single project. So that kind of turtles all the way down on that one.
Sure.
But like, I don't know. Is that just a coping mechanism? Is that actually progress? I don't know. Is that actually a good thing to do?
I think being able to task switch is helpful because sometimes you're working on a thing. And I've been in this position where like I have to get this one thing done.
Yeah.
But this bug is preventing me from getting this one thing done. And I'm stuck on this bug for 3 days. And really, it's just all I have to do is fix this one bug. But it takes me 3 days to do it.
Right.
Partly because I'm exhausted of having to deal with this stupid bug. Fixed itself. Obnoxious.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is like I'm stuck on this thing, and so like I can't get other stuff done until then. So like I have to focus on this. But if I was focused on something else while I was doing this, I might come up with another solution or alternative or something.
Yeah.
That would allow me to get past this thing more quickly than like me being stuck on figuring out whatever it is I need to figure out. You know, it's like when you like are in the you're stuck on a boss or something in the game. You know, you keep dying to this boss. You died to it 30 times, and it's late, and you're like, I gotta go to bed. I can't keep doing this. Then you wake up, and the next time you play it, you win right away.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you were like stuck on it, and I think that's an aspect of it.
Yeah,
I like
there's
that. Mm. That's like a set. Maybe I should like set a timer for like do not dwell on a certain task for longer than an hour.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, isn't it the Pomodoro technique, right?
Yeah,
is that you for half an hour or thereabouts, and you can adjust it.
Mm.
You work, and then you take 5-minute breaks or 10-minute breaks or whatever it is. But task switching can kind of be a little bit of a hack to that, which is that you've got two things on your plate, and one of them is blocked. Just switch to the other one for a while, make some progress on that.
Yeah.
That's as good as a break from the other one.
Yeah.
Now that's going to drain you for your budget of activity for the day, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's a way you can take a break without like just
actively taking a break.
Yeah, without going out to touch grass and wasting time.
Yeah.
Wasting time touching that grass.
Yeah. Waste time.
How
it is.
Dare you forest bathe when you should be coding?
Is that so? I think part of what helps me with it too, with respect to time management, is because like I have other people that are relying on me to do stuff, and they help like manage my time. It makes it easier for me to do.
Yeah.
But like the impression I'm getting, Beth, is that it's kind of up to you in order to manage that time, right?
That's what happens when you work for yourself.
Right.
I've never been less stressed about what I'm doing right now than when I had a project manager on my team.
Sure, yeah.
Who was just telling me what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you really think that's going to take away a lot of your freedom or your creativity, but it's just like, you can go home at the end of the day and it's not your problem.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
And I love being, I tell that project manager, like, this is not, it's taken longer than I thought. They go, okay, I'll figure it out. And I'm like,
great.
Tell me tomorrow how much time I have again.
It's
deal with the client. You let them know I'm not done yet.
Like, it is really wonderful.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You kind of lose the responsibility to set those things, and especially if you're a lead on something or you're working for yourself, and it matters to you. If you're doing work that needs to get done, then yes, it's great to have a team to help and assist.
True.
But I would say even when you are working on a team that has producers, that has project managers, that isn't always an option for creative professionals.
Yeah.
Take advantage where you can, I guess.
Yeah, you can't just be like, in 4 hours, get over writer's block. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Right?
You have to. Yeah. Sometimes you do have to power through it. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're throwing a bunch of advice out at you, and I don't know if it's, like, relevant for...
Maybe.
Okay, okay.
But the other side of it,
yeah,
time
yeah.
management.
There's another side of it.
I know there's so many sides.
Side. The other side of this question that I had is yeah. not just, like, hacks, but also... It's the whole work-life balance thing that everybody's
yeah.
always like,
sure.
It's just stupid to use that phrase. I know, like, everybody's overworked that. But
yep.
so, like, I understand, Mark, and I identify with having multiple projects because
yeah.
I can't stop saying yes to multiple things.
Yeah.
Not more than half of them don't pay me. So.
Yep, I've been there.
So I guess, like, how can I leverage that, like, need for, like, compensation to, like, help me focus more on the important tasks?
Yeah.
Oh,
or something. Like,
I've definitely had that experience, and I've definitely made the wrong decisions with regard to, like, my career progression or financial security, right?
Yeah.
I've decided to work on a project that I knew would take longer, would pay me less, or I'm going to take on this extra work that's going to pay me nothing, or volunteer work. Or like the work that you and I both do for the local chapter.
Yeah.
Like that's work that is thankless. People do thank us, but it's pretty thankless.
Yeah.
Pretty right. Thankless. Like I love our community, but like it is probably 10 times more work than most people know.
Right.
And obviously we do it because we're driven to, but at the same time, like it does harm us in real ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you just have to acknowledge those things. Now the saying yes to everything, I sympathize. There's a kind of natural, like things will fall apart and then they're not on your plate anymore. Like, that's awful. But, like, sometimes that is the way they get off my plate.
Sure.
It's like,
yeah.
it's just not happened. Or it's yeah. not working. Or it's like, I've wasted some time or
yeah.
whatever. And then, you know, if you have the force of will to make it work, then you're just dooming yourself to work on it more, which is maybe not the best solution. But I think it's, you have to adopt an attitude of compromise. So one of the things, and I talked about this in the episode a couple weeks ago, is when I put my written schedule together, I had to actually take a real look at the list of things I was doing.
Yeah.
And I had to pick a couple of them that I wasn't going to be working on. That I was just not, you know, I was just done thinking about until I don't know when.
Yeah.
And one of those things was the board games that we've made through
right.
Nice Games Jams
mm-hmm.
that we've been trying to move forward. A couple of them are in real great shape, and they actually don't need a ton of work to make happen. There's pitching. There's like a lot we've talked about on the show
yeah.
before. But that was a big sacrifice for me, because if it was just floating in the air with all my things to do, it would just drive me crazy, and I would devote some time to it, and then a bunch of other things would suffer. That attitude of compromise I had to adopt to say, like, and I also had to tell myself this might not be the right decision.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, these are the things I'm spending my time on. This is the structure I'm giving for it. And the other things are just, they suffer.
Yeah.
And you just have to choose for those things to suffer. And that is, it's easier said than done.
Prioritization.
Now, it's especially difficult.
Yeah.
If the things that you're setting aside are group projects or things you are that where you owe something to someone else or that they are relying on you. And then there's a whole matter of like actually what it takes to uncouple yourself from that commitment.
Okay.
And that is something that I've had some experience with it, but I don't have any advice on how to do it. I think generally people are understanding. Like when you are like, this is taking too much of my time, not paying me any money, people are really relying on me. Everyone else kind of knows that. Like,
yeah.
they may not know the specifics. They may not know the pressure is having on you. They may not know how hard it is that you're working or what it really takes. But then if it's time for you to step away, I like to think that I have faith in people that they might not be happy. They might even be upset. But I don't think they would hold it against you because in those situations. Like, I'd like to come from a position of that. Everything is different. But I would think that if someone was doing something that I knew, at least on some level, had very little benefits to them, they were doing it as a volunteer, or it was something we were working on together, but I know they had other things on their plate.
Right.
And like I can't choose their priorities for them. But when they come and say like I have to completely pull away from this, I could be like, well, that throws me into a tizzy. I have to figure some stuff out. But I feel like that's my own problem. Like I'd like to think most people would be okay with that.
Yeah.
And I think, and we're all very nervous to let others down.
Yeah.
But I think about how you would react if someone did that to you, and you can kind of get a general sense of how people react when you bring it to them. But this is all thought experiment. Like, you know, it's different in different situations. So people who won't understand. There are people who had expectations because you gave them expectations. And those are things that you just have to genuinely apologize for.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, like, I made a mistake. This is something that I pull back from. It's going to cause you stress and perhaps harm, but I'm owning that it's doing that. And that's all I can do for you. I think that's probably something that people have a hard time doing as well, because they think a lot about their own, what they are suffering, to keep it on their plate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you have anything like that in your life that you're looking to get rid of. Because this is like a maximalist thinking about this sort of thing. It's probably not often so stressful as all that, but dimensions there.
A lot of things are, well, if I were to pull back or pull out of things, like there are things that I want to see happen.
Yeah,
right.
And so, like, I think that's where the balance for me is the struggle, because I want a lot of things.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think a lot of what Mark was advocating for was just, like, prioritization, right? Just, like, making sure that, like, you say that these are the things that I desperately really, really need to happen or want really want to happen. And then these are the things that would be really cool to happen, but, like, maybe I can't do that. And, like, ideally your list isn't 10 things that you need to have happen, right?
10 tied for number one.
Yeah.
I would say, and I'm guessing your answer, because I feel very similar to a lot of things. It's like,
dang.
Obviously, a lot of times it is 10 tied for number one, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe that's just me.
You have to use other metrics.
Sure, yeah.
And that's that attitude of compromise. It's like, you have to understand this is bad.
Yeah.
Right? There's not a way you can solve this puzzle.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to come away with the least bad outcome.
Yeah.
Or maybe the middle bad, or maybe the worst bad, because you may not have all the information you need to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to make them.
You just need to make a decision.
Yeah, there's some, and a lot of times, like the Pomodoro technique or other time management techniques that are like based on hacks and stuff,
mm-hmm.
it, a lot of it is arbitrary.
Yeah.
And that is, as humans, that is very hard to handle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? To just be like, I'm making the decision for no particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I remember there's the, like, these are the important and urgent things, and these are, right? Like, you have the four quadrants. I never put anything not in the top two or whatever. Like, these are all important.
High priority, high urgency.
Or they wouldn't be on the list.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Which might be a sign that there's so many things that just don't go on the list. Those are the things that don't make it into that quadrant.
Is it possible that some things you can ask help with, and not even necessarily help doing the task, but just like telling you that it's not something you need to do right now?
Oh, are you volunteering to be my project manager, Steven?
No, I said somebody. Is there somebody? Somebody, maybe not in the clubhouse.
Yes, Steven, is there somebody?
That you know how to say no to things. I heard you when we were talking about creative director.
Dang it. This was all a trap.
You heard it here, folks.
I mean, Beth, honestly, though, I would be willing to help you with certain things. I think, honestly, I do think it's helpful to, like, ask people and say, like, is this something that, like, I need to do right now? Because, like, I have to, when I'm working in Future Club, I have to come up with my own tasks a lot of the time. Because, like, people aren't programmers and they don't necessarily know what I need to do in order to get a task done. And so, like, I'll work on a thing for a little bit, or I'll, like, come up with something I need to do. And then I will bring it to the attention of the team, and they'll be like, is this something that makes sense to work on right now? Because, like, I don't know if it's what we need or if it's holding anybody back or anything like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll be like, no, we don't need this right now. And then I'm like, okay, I'll switch to something else that makes more sense to do.
They may not be able to give you the answer to what you need right now.
Yeah.
But if you've got some options for them, they give feedback on that.
Yes. So, like, if you present this, like, maybe you could go to Andy and be like, you could be like, hey, I need to do this, this, and this. Do one of these three things not make sense to do right now? And then maybe Andy could be like, and maybe Andy doesn't even necessarily have a strong opinion on all of these things, but he's looking at this list and he's like, well, this seems more important than the other things.
And you're casting Andy just as an ear.
Yes.
In this, right?
Not, effectively.
Yeah. I mean, I would take anybody to arbitrarily be like, no, Beth, that's stupid. Don't do that.
Some of that, I mean, you're sort of framing it too, is like the obligations you have to other people.
Yeah.
Because you can go to them and you don't have to give them the whole story, but you can say like, hey, there's this thing I got to do to you or we're doing together.
Yeah.
But how important is it? Can we move it? And let me know and be honest so that they can tell you, and then that will help you then prioritize.
Yeah.
Because they can say like, oh, this is actually so important because next week I'm going to be out of town or whatever.
Right.
And then you could be like, oh, I wouldn't have thought that. I was thinking it was at the bottom of the list and I'm going to put it in the middle or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Just have somebody else help you prioritize things. Because, like, it's true when you're, like, in the middle of it, too. It's difficult to, like, remove the emotional factor from it.
Well,
sometimes
same...
everything feels very urgent because it is very urgent. But like, it's helpful to have somebody else who can recognize that maybe this thing is less urgent than you feel like it is.
It's the same muscle as asking for help.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't use that one.
Well, and that's why it feels so hard to do, because you're actually asking someone to deal with the fallout of something, right? That is asking for help.
Yeah.
And I too am very bad at that.
Mm.
And I tend to when I don't get what I need from people who have promised me something.
Yeah.
My reaction to that tends to be, all right, I guess I'm not gonna put them in that situation again.
Mm.
And then I kind of generalize that.
Sure.
And so part of the reason I do have a kind of a do-it-allness attitude is I tend not to want to burden people with the responsibility, or I don't want to, like, then I got to follow up and we have to work together.
Yeah.
And like, you have to ask questions and I have to ask you questions. And I feel like you don't want to do that.
Sure.
And so, and I also, when I am obligated to somebody, I kind of treat that as final.
Yeah.
And that gets me in trouble sometimes. So I am very bad at that. I will tend to just, like, whatever I agreed to, like, I will just do it, like, regardless of when situations change, because I just don't want to go to someone and tell them, like, sorry, the deal has changed. Pray I don't change it any further. Because like, that's what it feels like. You feel like Darth Vader in that moment, right? You feel like you, even when you can totally intellectualize it, and even when you do understand, like I was preaching but not practicing about, like, that people will be understanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Because it can be less stressful for you just to stress out and do the thing than it would be to manage whatever it is to not do the thing.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I was like, just bring it up to somebody who doesn't necessarily have
who's
any skin
not
in the game.
In it.
Yeah,
right, right.
Because like then they
a
can
neutral
keep,
arbiter. Yeah.
They can give you an arbitrary reason why you shouldn't do this thing, and then it'll help you think about other reasons why you maybe shouldn't do this thing. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. That seems valuable. Because I also don't have the best. I'm not great at asking for help either. If I am struggling with a thing, I just suffer, which isn't great, and I'm trying to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've gotten a little bit better about it. And I think it's helpful to just like recognize that like you're in this position. I mean, frankly, Beth, the fact that you brought this to the table means you're putting in some work to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So like, I think that like, if you have any random decisions or things that you want, you could tell us about it, and we could be like, yeah, pick A. And then you'd be like, no, A's stupid. And then you're like, oh, wait, I know why
A's
stupid.
Yeah. I think that's
Steven's
it,
got that
like,
hammer.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything is like, oh, no, I need to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I were to ask you and you'd be like, oh, A, B, and C are, no, those just seem silly wastes of your time. I'd be like,
yeah.
They're not a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Well, that one is. But
yeah.
Right, it's the rubber duck thing, right?
Yeah.
It's you just need someone to bounce back and forth with, because
yep.
they are not going to understand your situation.
Right.
Yep.
And so they're not actually going to be able to make those decisions for you.
Yeah.
Unless it's so obvious and you're so blind to it, which can happen.
Mm.
But a lot of times it's just to get a fresh eye on it,
yeah.
and then you do the rest of the thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's why I'm so good at consulting on time management,
uh-huh.
because I can tell other people what they need to do, but I can't do mine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, really, the solution to this is if everyone just hires Beth to do stuff and pays her money for it,
yeah.
then it'll all kind of work out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I will get the paid work done, but
yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But then I might just be way stressed.
Well, because we live as people who, you know, are part of volunteer communities and who do projects that are self-started and entrepreneurial.
Yeah,
it's just this muck
mm-hmm.
of priorities and responsibilities and connections, and it is. You will find people who just have a 9-to-5 job and like, why does this seem so complicated to you people?
Yeah.
Well, and it's like, because it is actually a 24-hour job.
Yeah, yeah. 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 Like even when you do have a good work-life balance,
mm-hmm.
it's like so much of your time is spent figuring out how to spend your time.
Yes.
And that is just.
Am I going to go on the podcast? Am I going to say no?
Thank goodness you didn't.
Yeah, you said yes to this.
I did.
Which got us out of a jam. So,
yeah.
You know.
That's the social credit. Collecting it right now.
No. Yeah, yeah.
I am kidding. I never pull in debts. I'm always just like, you owe me, haha. And it never collect. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe start collecting a little.
Okay. Okay.
We're making progress, I think, is the theme.
Yeah.
Little baby steps.
Well, I do want to hear, ask people to join the Discord in the middle of the show, mm-hmm. but I want to hear people's thoughts on this, because this is definitely something where you'll find people who have just the best ideas on things you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah.
And here we all just all being like, I don't know. Like, I think what we have is we have wisdom, but not knowledge is what we have.
Yeah, effectively that.
And that's such a dangerous place to be.
It really is.
I want to hear from listeners, so check out the Discord and tell Beth how to spend her time.
Yes.
Maybe volunteer to make some decisions for her, and let us know how you handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can totally at me. I probably won't answer, though.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and loot goblins. Reply on the various platforms, it's pretty much Threads these days, or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual or let us know how you manage your time, please stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. And so, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Beth.
Blur.
Blur. Right.
What's the blur?
Oh, it's the call to action.
Oh.
Yeah, we normally do it in the middle of the recording. Oh. And I picked Discord.
Oh, I was like, I gotta find.
Okay, so whoever's
the blur.
Editing this, that's not as good an outtake as it could have been. Let's just start.
Sorry, everybody.
No, you're fine.
It's on the way to something.
All right. So we're gonna invite
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.